Would he be better at Manchester United than Solskjaer?
Well, I'm only giving you my opinion. I believe so.
Subscribe now to the OTB Football Podcast stream wherever you get your podcasts and download the OTB Sports app.
The OTB Podcast Network.
Now, very happy to welcome the Mayo Hurling captain to the show, Keith Higgins, one of the great footballers of the past decade plus, 16 seasons with the Mayo Footballers, 75 appearances in the Championship alone, made his debut in 05. A lot of All-Ireland final days, plenty of All-Stars as well, four to be exact. And in January, he announced he'd be leaving the football behind, but he still has the hurl. He is the Mayo Hurling captain. Keith, great to have you on. Thanks so much for your time.
Not at all. Thanks for having me on. Yeah, good to be here.
It's nice to be talking to an active inter-county player, still a bit older than me. Good man. Keep it going.
Yeah, thanks very much. It probably feels like I should be hanging up the boots at this stage, but yeah, it's kind of hard to walk away from it at all, you know. So, yeah, kind of happy to be still doing something and keeping us busy for another while.
Well, I want to talk to you about the hurling. We might start with the football where you left off. So, retirement announced in January. When did you know you were going? What was your sense about this very last strange season post-COVID as you headed into it?
Yeah, I don't think I had a really exact kind of time in mind, as you know, that I was definitely going to call it a day. You know, I remember saying to someone else previously as well, you know, starting 2020, again, not kind of saying to myself, you know, this was the last hurrah, this was it, and I was going to the end of the year. It was, for me, it was always the case, just kind of playing it year on year. So yeah, I started 2020 kind of feeling okay, feeling good. Came back after the lockdown, you know, in very decent shape, but then just a few little bits of niggles and just kind of nearly held me back then towards the end of the year, and just never felt like I could get to the level I really wanted to get to, even though I was probably getting closer, but just felt going into the new year again, I probably wasn't going to be where I really wanted to be or where I felt I could be to make a difference. So just probably felt, you know, like the right time to go. I mean, you know, from my point of view, it was a case of if I couldn't be kind of at the same levels of fitness or speed that I had over the last few years, then it was just going to be frustrating years. So I just felt it was the right time.
And was the speed drop due to age or due to the niggles? I guess it would strike me if you were 20, if you were 22 and had those niggles, you'd say, oh, well, look, I'll get back on it and I'll get back again. But obviously, maybe you feel age was coming into it too.
Yeah, I think it was a bit of both, to be quite honest. You know, yeah. I think it was... yeah, the niggles probably were affecting it as well, but yeah, I think it was just a case of, you know, probably age wasn't helping me either. You know, like, you're in training and when you're like Oisin Mullen and Tommy Conroy and these boys kind of bursting past you and everything, you're kind of kind of hits home fairly quick that they're on a different level. Yeah, I think it was a combination of things, to be quite honest with you, and probably just, you know, yeah, I wouldn't say it was really one thing, so it was just a combination of things. Like I said, just I didn't want to be going through the year kind of frustrated at not being able to get to that level, you know, kind of frustrated with whether I was getting injured or what, maybe not starting, all these different things. So
yeah,
I just didn't want to be the guy who was kind of moping around training in a bad mood all the time. So I felt it was best to step away.
And say a year ago, 18 months ago, would those same boys have been getting by you in training?
Probably would have, but I might have been able to hide it a bit better, you know. So, no, like I said, at the start of 2020, you know, I kind of was probably a bit later coming back than a lot of the guys, but... So we played Kerry in the league, even though it didn't go great for us. It was my first full game and kind of felt like I was kind of getting stronger, you know, just as the lockdown kicked in. So,
yeah,
you know, I'm not blaming that or anything, but I don't think it helped the cause either. But
no, I think at your age, you probably need momentum. Breaks aren't as good for you, maybe.
Yeah, and I remember even Andy saying a few years ago that at the end of a year, he'd have to kind of keep training toward, you know, when we weren't playing, just keep the body moving. And I think the whole thing, you know, and we were doing our own kind of fitness stuff in the middle of lockdown, but we were not playing games. I think the body just kind of ceases up a small bit as well. And, you know, it makes it a bit difficult. But look, that's life. Things move on. So I'm not going to hold any grudges or bear any bad feeling towards it or anything.
So in the build-up to the All-Ireland final, that very surreal All-Ireland final, you wouldn't have harboured much hope of starting, certainly. Maybe chance of getting on type thing?
Yeah, 100%. And look, I would have talked with James probably a few weeks before that, and we kind of both knew where we're at. I knew I wasn't going to start. I hadn't probably played 10 minutes since we came back after the lockdown. So realistically, I knew that. He knew that. I think everybody knew that. But I, you know, I was confident of maybe coming on at some stage. You know, came on against Galway. Probably things were getting a bit tight the last few minutes. You know, wasn't really awfully upset. Didn't come on against Tipperary because the game was done and dusted. But you know, I would have felt I was in a decent position. But you know, like I said before, James made his decision. That's the way he went. And, you know, I have to kind of respect that, I suppose.
Did that probably seal the deal a bit in your mind?
Maybe, yeah. I'm not saying it was a deciding factor, Anthony, yeah, but like I knew even if looking into next year, things were probably going to be the exact same, where it would have been maybe a bit power player coming on here and there. Again, and I said this to James, it's not a case of walking away just because I'm not starting, but, you know, it was probably in the back of the mind as well, yeah.
It doesn't help. I suppose, I guess.
No, look, everyone wants to be playing, everyone wants to be playing every game they can, but like I said, it wasn't the deciding factor, Anthony, but yeah, it's always in the back of the head.
Yeah, for sure. What a weird All-Ireland final. I mean, you've been involved in your fair share of them. I make it 7, including replays, but I could be off there.
I'll take your word for on that, yeah.
Yeah, no, I had a check, but I mean, there've been a few, obviously. Was losing the one pre-Christmas empty stadium, was that every bit as hard to take for you and for the team? And did it hit home every bit as much as, say, you know, the 82,000 in Croke Park type ones with all the build-up and all the pageantry and the sense of event that goes alongside it? Was it easier to get over for some perverse reason?
It probably was a small bit. Like, I mean, don't get me wrong, the disappointment you have the couple of days after it were still as bad as ever. Like, like the build-up of it too. Build-up was obviously enough that different, the fact that there was no tickets, there was no hype, there was no banquets, everything like that. So it was a lot quieter from that point of view. But the disappointment, I suppose, the one thing about it was, you know, you have a couple of days kind of getting over it afterwards, and then you're straight into Christmas week, which is a bit surreal, and, you know, life moves on. You have other priorities for that week, and, you know, you're trying to make the best of it. So I think
hard to be miserable at Christmas dinner, like, you don't
know. Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I think that was probably the one thing. I mean, like you said, you're straight into something else, a kind of big family event and all that. So it was, that probably got out of the mind a bit quicker, but initially I wouldn't have said the disappointment was any less.
Yeah. And was it nice not having the demand for tickets and all the hype beforehand, or have you come to really enjoy that period?
Definitely wouldn't enjoy it, to be honest with you. I would have hated, I suppose, in other years, because you're trying to keep everyone happy, and, you know, it's an unnecessary, well, I'd say unnecessary distraction, but it is a distraction. It's just something that can be a bit annoying. But yeah, it was nice that you didn't have it, but at the same time, like that, in a kind of funny kind of roundabout way, it does make the whole build-up to it, as much as you don't like it, you know. So I'm kind of contradicting myself a small bit there, but it all adds to the build-up of an alarm, I suppose.
And how did you handle your ticket situation and all the demands on you in the build-up to all these finals? Did you outsource it somehow? Or were you still getting stopped in the street by someone going, look, I'm sorry to ask, but could you get me one at all? Even I'll sit anywhere, I'll go on the hill. Or how was it for you generally?
I think in fairness, the first couple of years, you would have tried to do everything yourself and tried to keep everybody happy, but...
Yeah.
You know, as the years went on, I suppose like that you kind of outsourced, or you got someone else to look after for you, and you kind of directed all the calls to the father or the brother, whoever it was. But I think in fairness, the majority of people that you'd work with, or that you'd see in Castlebar every day or around Ballyhonus, they knew not to kind of annoy you about these things. You know, you kind of knew you only got a limited supply and that you had to look after the people most important. So in fairness, I wasn't plagued too much.
What an incredible journey from your debut in 05. I think from memory, you were very involved in setting up Kieran McDonald for that famous point against Dublin in the 06 semi-final. And then to bridge the gap through to the Horan years and all, you know, these amazing matches against Dublin. That is a hell of a career. I know it's missing that one beautiful fairy tale ending somewhere along the way, but geez, you had a lot of amazing days. 70 appearances in the championship.
Yeah, it was, I mean, I can still remember that first day. Made the debut against Dublin, the league in 2005, like, and remember doing the warm-up in Frozen, nearly hoping I wasn't going to be brought on, do you know, that kind of way. So, yeah. Like I said, there's so many other good days, like the 0-6 one is a funny one. I remember doing an interview there a few weeks ago, like, and actually watched the game there kind of throughout when the lockdowns was on, when the channels, like, and, you know, people forget, like, if you watch that game for about 60 minutes, Alan Brogan took me to the cleaners, you know. I'm surprised I wasn't up in the Hogan stand watching the last 20 minutes of that game. It was that bad. And then you're involved in one or two big plays at the end of it, and everyone says you had a great game. So it's funny how perceptions change. But like you said there, it is kind of, you know, people always talk about the journey beyond all this, and that is kind of the one thing you look back on with the most satisfaction, I suppose, rather than actually the big days out and the big wins, because you just have so much fun and cracking along the way that it is, that's probably going to be the hardest part to miss.
Yeah. It's a weird one, isn't it? Would you trade all that in for one or two great years where you managed to nick an All-Ireland?
Oh, yeah. There's certainly lots of it you trade in just to get that medal, all right, yeah. Whether you trade it all in, it's hard to know. Mm. I mean, you know, like I said, there for 15, 16 years, some very good, some not so good. I don't know. Something I kind of don't want to really think about because you'd end up driving yourself mad, wondering about the ifs and buts of all these things. So
yeah,
I think you just have to be happy with your lot at this stage and move on.
Well, I mean, your lot is a lot better than most counties in the country. And I always say about Mayo fans, they've had the best three decades, maybe on average. They're in the top 2-3 in the country, that's for sure. Like, they have a great time. And as you know, like, the place goes mad and then all the emigrants fly in for the big games and it's a real kind of community thing and everyone gets together. Like, there's such joy in it as well for all the heartache when you're walking back down O'Connell Street at 6 o'clock as a fan.
Yeah, and in fairness, I mean, the supporters that you'd meet, that's the one thing they'll say to you is thanks for all the great days out. And, you know, it's kind of, I suppose it's the memories that they'll have as well that goes along with probably the last 10 years. So
the bond with the team is extraordinary now and it's become a huge, huge thing. I know it was always big. I know like the 89 team flying up from Knock and beyond, like there's always been a great bond there. But it seems incredible over the last decade, the bond that the team has with the fans. Like, was it there in the same way from memory in kind of 05, 06, 07 territory? I don't feel like it quite was. And I don't know when that changed or why that changed.
Yeah, like it definitely, there was always probably the diehards that were always around. But like, I remember playing my first few league games in Castlebar and you might have 3,000 or 4,000 people at it, like, you know, there's, now if you have a league game against Kerry or Dublin or these guys on the Saturday in Castlebar, you'd have 10 or 15,000, if not more at it. Like, so in a way, I think the way the league is now, the fact that you're playing the top teams all the time has helped. The fact that we've been probably successful enough in the last 10 years has helped as well. But yeah, I don't know where that kind of change happened. I think it was definitely after James took over, probably about 11 or 12. You know, I'm not sure where this whole bond came out. I think, I'm not sure, was it a preconceived thing of trying to get the county behind us again? And, you know, I remember Andy coming out with a statement, we're all in this together and all these types of things. So, you know, there probably was a bit of it that was nearly kind of designed just to kind of get the support there and get behind the team. But yeah, like, they've been fantastic. Like, I mean, they travel everywhere. They go to FPD games in their thousands. So, you know, like I always say, they're kind of bordering on crazy sometimes, but in the best possible way. So, you know, we can't find complaints about that.
And look, I'm sure there's the odd people who are critical, but it doesn't seem like they're a massively critical bunch either. There's like a sense of, well, we can't really ask much more of this team and they've given us some unbelievable days. So I don't get a sense even on the bad days that like Midwest radio phone-ins the next day are like destroying the team and everyone's a disgrace and they're a shower who don't care. I get the sense that the crowd, the fan base in the main, I'm sure there are exceptions, but in the main, I get the feeling it's a very kind of forgiving fan base and understanding fan base.
Yeah, it's just a very supportive fan base, I suppose. Yes, you know, it's like you said, you know, people will always have opinions on what should have been done or what could have been done or what team should have been picked and all this type of thing. And that's going to be part and parcel of any team in any sport anywhere in the world. So, but like I said, in the main, they've been hugely supportive. Like, you just have to see it. You know, you could get bet when, I suppose, look, you look at Newbridge there in 2018 and come the first round of the league in 2019, they're there again, they're thousands. So it's, you know, I think for them as well, they're probably realizing that the good days create so many good memories and they just want to keep it going as long as they can as well.
Yeah, like I never got a sense they turned on the team. Like after Newbridge, there was no sense of, oh, we've turned on the team. Yeah.
No, I don't think so. And like, that's the kind of thing that they're very loyal, I suppose. But, you know, I think, again, like any kind of genuine support will know like that there is a decent team there again. There is a lot of potential in that team that there could be other good days out. So, you know, thing with Mayo, as much as we'd want hurling to be as popular as well, football is like religion down here at times, you know. So it's you know, that's all a lot of people talk about, a lot of people look forward to.
You were such an enjoyable player to watch, brilliant player to watch. The speed, I mean, at times was frightening, and you'd be making 40, 50, 60 yard dashes up the field, and it very much fitted in with this kind of cavalier Mayo, let's have a go kind of a thing. You know, it was fantastic. That must be a thrilling thing if you're able to verbalise it. Probably difficult to be racing the length of Croke Park and you can probably hear the crowd as you're carrying the ball and working your way up the field. That's kind of a magic experience, I would think. Are you aware of like all of that around you as you're galloping up the field?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I think that probably makes you nearly go a bit faster as well when you come out and next thing you hear the big roar. But yeah, like I said, it probably was the way we played for a few years initially. We were probably a bit maybe green, I suppose, in some ways. Probably maybe 11, 12, maybe even 13, that it was just all out attack. Everyone goes and what happens at the back just happens and we'll get over it, you know. But I think it probably suited us a bit as well, given the players that we had, and probably similar enough to the way we played last year as well, with the likes of O'Sheen and Owen McLaughlin, these guys coming on, you know, they're built for a running type of a game. So like I said, probably suited us at the time, that, you know, that's play to your strengths, and, you know, that's what we did. And, you know, looking back in hindsight, if we maybe had been a bit smarter or a bit more tactically aware, we could have gone a bit further with things. But like I said, I think it was just the way the game was at the time and the way that suited us best at the time. So, I think it led on to, or one led on to the other in a way.
So when did the more slightly defensive shift happen? Because in 12, obviously, Donegal, you know, 2011 in particular, Donegal's super defensive. To be fair, they weren't as defensive. They were attacking as well as defensive in 12. But that tactical shift had happened. Who kind of said it in the Mayo context, lads, we need to be a little more sensible at times? Who drove that slight change?
I don't think I'd single out one person for it. I think, you know, if we look back even probably 2013, we kind of still took the same approach that we were just going to go out and play.
Right.
Even Dublin at the time were the same. I mean, you know, you look at 2014, obviously, when they got beaten by Donegal, you could probably see the shift in how they probably started to set back.
They changed overnight, really, then. Was there an overnight one for ye in the same way?
I don't think so. Like, even 2014 against Kerry, we were still probably, you know, we were going down that route of just kind of going all out. 2015, under Pat Noel, I think we probably tried a bit, maybe, with the kind of sweeper in a couple of games. But I think probably, Stephen Rockford come in, probably changed things as well a bit in that. You know, I think of probably the Tyrone game, the quarterfinal in 16, you know, using Alan Dillon in the role he used. Probably was a small bit more tactically aware, I suppose, or tried to be a bit more tactically aware. And I think, you know, 2016 and definitely 2017, it probably got us the closest that we ever got. So I'd probably say them years probably were. But, you know, even then, obviously 2019 with James, you know, winning the league and probably, you know, losing to Roscommon that day was sort of a bit of a kind of kick for us, and it kind of dented us a small bit in that we probably didn't push on as much as we should have in the championship after that. And then with the way last year went, the fact that it was such a short season, like I said, there with kind of the players we had, it probably suited us just to go all guns out again for that, you know. So, probably those middle years were probably, Stephen, were probably the most where there was, we're probably as more tactically astute. But I suppose, again, before that, like I said, it was just given the players we had and given the way the game was, and probably in 12, 13, 14, we didn't need to be or didn't think we needed to be tactically aware.
So tactically, what's the big difference across the 70 minutes in 2019, 2020 territory versus when you come on the scene in 05, 06?
Oh, look, in 05, 06, tactics weren't really a thing, you know. It was,
were they not?
15 on 15 and you stand in the corner and you mark your man and that's it, like, you know.
Tyrone, not so, and Armagh, the North, brought that in.
A bit, yeah, but again, like, I think they're probably a bit much made of Tyrone. The whole thing, they just brought a different kind of level of work rate, really, if you look at their games. Okay. You know, they're probably getting men back a small bit, you know. Sometimes teams played with maybe two men in the full forward line and one fella came out a bit deeper, and that was probably the height of it.
That was tactics.
Yeah, like, realistic it was. Like, even if you look back at the 0-6 games, like, it was probably even 0-7, 8, 9, it was get the ball and kick it a lot of the times, you know. Some teams probably played a bit more of a running game, but that was it. Then I think obviously Jim McGuinness brought in the whole defensive side of things, and, you know, even you look at now the way Dublin are set up, like, they seem to be very, you know, they really seem to know tactically what they're doing, both on the ball and off the ball. Like, I don't think there's a stage where Dublin would turn the ball over in defence and next thing it's 10 lads are kind of bursting forward 100 miles an hour. They'll slowly build it up, they'll get their forwards set up again, and they develop the play. So,
yeah, they seem to have taken it to a new level, this patience on the ball and possession and stretching the pitch and, you know, putting the hand in the air signal and all this kind of stuff. So,
yeah, you'd wonder about that at times. Is it just a kind of
psychological?
But like I said, I think they are very smart, and like I said, how they set up their attack as well. Like, and
So gives a sense of that, because I think people would love to get your understanding of that, because the real cutting edge stuff, I don't feel we hear about it enough on TV at times. What kind of stuff would they be doing? Even one thing that would jump out that they have done in the last year or two or three that you were trying to counteract and prepare for?
Yeah, the dull boys, they could think I'm kind of way off the mark here when I say it. You mentioned it there, they make the pitch very wide. They could be coming down the right-hand side of the pitch, but they'll have two or three lads over on the left side just trying to drag them out of play. They'll probably keep one or two kind of very close to goal, the full forward line, to kind of, like I said, bring that depth to it as well. And they just seem to kind of very good at clearing that space around the D, for that they'll take the ball coming towards goal and they'll get their percentage shot off from in that area, but they are very good in how they do it. It's easy to say that, they do these things and to see that they do it, but to have the players smart enough and well, unselfish enough to do it is a different thing. And that's where you have to give them the credit.
So you in defence, or Mayo in defence, for instance, you would be conscious they've got, their maybe two players on each touchline and they're trying to stretch the play. You would all be, the game within the game here is, that they're trying to work a little bit of space around the D and they want to create space for runners to come into. So is it like, don't get sucked out, or how do you counteract that?
Yeah, again, it's funny. You're conscious of where they want to maybe shoot from or where the space is. But like I said, this is where they're very good in that. If the case they're coming down the wing and you're kind of really trying to stay defensive or whatever, and they'll do that kind of double back like you see basketball players or whatever they call it, and next thing they just pop a hand passing over the top and they'll cut in from the side. So, in fairness, they have a lot of strings to their bow, so they can kind of work it both ways. There's a difference of knowing something's going to happen and trying to stop it happening as well. But like I said, that's kind of where, from my point of view, that's where you have to give them the credit in that they are such good footballers and such smart footballers, I think.
Yeah, so that kind of choreography, that just wasn't even a feature 10 years ago, really, in the same way.
Not at all. I remember probably 06 with Mickey Moore and John Morrison, and I suppose the most you'd do is how you'd set up the full forward line, whether you'd have them in a straight line or whether you'd have them tied together or breaking out the wings, that was it. Whereas now, it just appears that they know exactly, well, not exactly what they're doing, but they know what they want to do when they have the ball.
Mm. And you'd be the same, I presume, in attack?
Yeah, you try to be. Whether James changes it this year or not, I don't know what the plan is this year. But I suppose, again, probably going back a few years ago, you would have a thing where one of the two of the boys would try to stay a lot deeper, and then you have one maybe a bit further out as the main kind of ball winner and after that. And then, obviously, it depends on where Aiden was as well on the pitch. But again, I wouldn't have said we were probably as structured as what they appear to be.
Right. Did you have a favourite position?
That's a funny one. I suppose I would have always kind of played in the half-back line with the club. So I would have preferred that probably centre-back position. But, being honest, when we were playing with Mayo, I just seem to prefer a cornerback for some reason. I think there's a big difference between playing centre-back on a club team and playing centre-back on an inter-county team, But maybe it's just because I was there so long, I wouldn't say I got comfortable with it, but I just got comfortable playing in that position, if that makes sense,
Yes. And which manager, Keith, would have said to you, listen, you've got all that pace, you've got all that energy, I want you to make your man's life miserable. Every time he looks up, I want you taken off. Who told you to really go for it?
I don't know. I think I'd say probably if looking back, probably like said Mickey Moore and John Morrison, when they were into 06, they were very much of, they weren't going to, stop you going forward, I suppose, They were never going to say, you can't go past half the line, get back in, cornerback.
Right.
But then, I don't think there was no manager that was like that, really, in all fairness. But I think probably 11, 12, James, like most guys, when Lee Keegan came on the scene, when Donny Fawn came on the scene as well, it was use the pace that's there, And if it's on, just go for it.
What's the most disappointing defeat? What was the worst day?
I don't know if it's I look back and it probably 2012, maybe Donegal were just that bit more cuter in how they set up. 13, I think, was definitely there for the taking. We didn't play well, but 17 was probably the most disappointing one because I felt that was the best we were playing. We probably the best we played in the final. For me, 17 sticks out the most, but like I said, I wouldn't, they're all very disappointing, I'm saying.
Sure. And what was the
17 is one I'd highlight,
I think a lot of people that look at that one. Geez, the standard of football then, whew, was incredible. Mm-hmm. They were just amazing games. What was the best day, Keith? For personal reasons or otherwise, there may be a certain game you like because there's a certain family member there or that kind of stuff, I know, feeds into it.
Yeah, I'd struggle to kind of you know, you'd look back and you'd have the semi-final in 06, the semi-final in 12, obviously just because the whole atmosphere around them, they've obviously been involved in Dublin, the games were kind of mental, crazy, and, you know, you come out on the right side of it and it's great. But yeah, I think personally, you're probably looking at this under 21 final in 06 or probably the kind of final in 15, just because literally, you know, you're captain of those teams. And from a personal point of view, they're the big ones. But like, there's so many games that you look back on that were just great occasions, I suppose. But unfortunately, most of them are semi-finals or kind of finals. You know?
A lot of retirements, by the way. Geez, January, every time we were on air, it was like, who's retired now? So I think David Clark, Shamie O'Shea, Donald Vaughan, Tom Parsons, Chris Barrett. There's a real sense of end of an era. How are you feeling about it all as it's about to start up again without you? I know you've got the hurling, which we're going to come to now, but how are you feeling about the decision and watching, I guess, your brothers in many ways who you know so well continuing?
Yeah, look, I've come to terms with this stage. Now I'm happy enough with it. But yeah, like you said, it was kind of every day you're waking up and you're wondering who's going to be next. But and I said this to so many people as well, given kind of the age profile of the team and the fact that most of the boys were there for so long, I think once one or two went, it was always going to be a case of three or four were going to go at the same time. You know, not that it was choreographed or anything, but just given the age profile of the team, you know, I think we've seen it happen with different teams throughout the years, you know, that would have been successful and they would have been on the road a long time, that you're always going to have a case of three or four going at the same time. Unfortunately, in our case, it was five or six. But yeah, look, happy with the decision. It's, like I said, just felt like the right time. So I suppose, like you said there, the fact that I'm kind of still kind of going with the hurlers, I'm probably not thinking about it as much or probably not missing it as much just yet. So, you know, we'll see when the championship comes around. It could be a different story. But for now, yeah, I'm still feeling good.
So the hurling then, I had always known there was a hurling interest, obviously, to say the least. I think was it in 2018 you took off the football campaign to hurl, and I think Mayo won a Division 2B title then. So people were generally aware the hurling was going on. Your father, a big hurling man, is that right?
Yeah, he would be. I suppose he's from Galway originally. He would have been kind of involved with setting up hurling here in the club in Ballyhonus back in the late 80s, early 90s. So there would always been a big connection there. So yeah, growing up, hurling would always been part of the life, I suppose. And yeah, look, I think anyone around Mayo would have always known, you know, I would have been playing hurling with Mayo before I started playing football. So that would have always been there. And in fairness, all the managers all the way through, none of them really said to me, you know, you can't play hurling with Mayo. So they would have been very accommodating throughout the years, which I have to be very grateful for. So yeah, it was always kind of there. It was always kind of happening, just probably wouldn't have been happening an awful lot. So yeah, like I said, took the league in 2018 off, I suppose, just coming on the disappointment that Ireland in 2017 just kind of wasn't really feeling it, I suppose, to put it in better terms. But
really? Yeah, interesting. You just needed a break almost.
Yeah, I think there was a few things going on. They just disappointed probably the All-Ireland in 2017 as well. Just probably thought, can I face this again? So I remember chatting to Stephen about it and he just said, look, take a break for a few weeks, for a few months and see how it goes. And I hadn't planned on actually going back hurling. It was just a case of trying to get away from the football, I suppose, more than anything for a while. And then Derek Welsh, who was a neighbour of mine here and a good friend, was involved with the Mayo Hurlers, and he asked me what the story was, and I told him. He just goes, will you come along? So that's kind of how that all worked out. Right. So a bit of a coincidence more than anything. But
Sorry to interrupt. That gives an insight, because I know you kind of say, look, they're disappointing days and you brush it off and all the Mayo players do. But even that gives an insight into what it really takes out of you to put all that effort in and get to 17, that come even January, February, you're still not over it. I think that gives us a bit of an insight into, you know, typical man going, sure, it's disappointing and we move on. But obviously it's really deep and really tough to take.
Yeah, that would have been the first time that I would have felt that way, to be honest. Like even after 12, 13, 16, it was always a case of, right, let's go back at this. You know, we're not far away. But for some reason, you know, 2017, I said, there's a few other things going on outside of football that probably just kind of hit home a bit more and just thought, right, I need to have a think about this, need to get away for a while. So, so that's how that came about, yeah. But like I said, went back then to the championship and unfortunately didn't turn out too well that year.
Because I'm told by someone in the county, your father really has turned Ballyhonus into pretty much best team in the county. He's done a phenomenal job there. He's doing his best to make it a real stronghold.
He is. He's been out now since 1988 or something like that. So
was there basically no hurling in Ballyhonus before he pitched up?
At the time, there hadn't been for years, from what I can recall or what I told. But no, there wasn't. Look, it wasn't just him. There was probably a group of four or five or six people that got it going at underage and in the national school. And we're lucky that that kind of group kind of came, nearly all of them kind of came through then, and probably what, 1998, I think they started playing junior or senior for the first time. So,
nice.
Okay, he would have been heavily involved, but I said it wasn't purely down to him. There was an experience. We were lucky there was a kind of a core group, and they kind of kept driving things on.
There's a bit of that with hurling around the country, because obviously there are the strongholds and the counties we all know. Like even where I grew up in Selbridge, there wasn't really a hurling tradition, but a bunch of people from the usual counties had moved up to Dublin, and so they got it going, and 20 years later it's very vibrant. And I think South Dublin is the same. A lot of, you know, Galway people pitched up there and got it going there, and Coola and all that stuff. So it often is one or two from like a Galway in your case that said, right, let's get this going here.
But like you see that in so many counties. I mean, you look at, obviously there's parts of Antrim or parts of Kerry, you know, and same here, I suppose in Mayo, you look at Turin, who would have a strong tradition in hurling, whereas, you know, there's parts of big footballing county that would have little pockets of hurling in them. So it's probably not uncommon all over the country, but like a lot of sometimes is just down to maybe a few blow-ons keeping things going as well.
Yeah, spreading the gospel. So would you have been considered, or would you consider yourself, say, growing up, teenage years, before you dedicated so much to the football, would you have been considered a better hurler or footballer?
Like I would have always considered probably hurling as the number one sport, probably up until it was, minor anyways, until it was brought in with the Mayo Minors. Even then, probably playing under 21, you know, it would have been hurling first. Oh. And then, you know, I would have been hurling away up until John Mahon called me in 05 to the football. So, you know, in them few years, I was kind of nearly always kind of doubt myself whether I was actually good enough to be on the Mayo football team, because, like I said, it was just, I've always seen myself kind of as a hurler first, you know.
Jeez. For a fella doubting himself, you did win like the Young Footballer of the Year in the country in 2006. So
but I think I was very lucky. Like I said, I think football then at the time was very different. I think Pate probably got me out of a lot of trouble back then. You know, I think if you looked at it, a cornerback would get the ball and either just kick it as far as he could or he'd hand pass it off. Yeah. You know, I think so. Like, I would have felt that way for a good few years, to be honest with you, that football-wise, I probably wasn't a good footballer. I was probably just a good defender, if that makes sense. You know, I think it's probably only from the latter years when the game changed that you need to be more comfortable on the ball, and there's more emphasis on the skill work side of things. So, that's kind of where my train of thought was for the first few years.
Interesting. So what kind of hurler are you? You're a forward?
Forward, yeah. So I don't know what type of hurler I am. Another, I've always played in the forwards in hurling as well. So,
Would you a scorer, playmaker, ball winner?
I'd like to say a bit of everything, but okay, I think you have to ask the manager about that one,
What is it about hurling that you love? I mean, it's such an incredible sport to have played both to county level, you know, such a rare thing. What is it about hurling for you?
I don't know. I think you just kind of get a kind of a liking for something when you're young. And I wouldn't say it came easy, but it probably came easier than football to me for some reason. And like that, I suppose when things are kind of going well, you kind of tend to enjoy it a bit more. And, you know, we're probably successful enough at underage, as I suppose, as successful as you can be in Mayo. But like I said, things just went well and just was really enjoyed it. And it was probably good for my friends here in town as well. We're playing as well. It's kind of made things a bit easier. So I don't know what it is that draws me to it, but it's just a game I just love playing, probably just the free flow nature to it. Like I said, it's just once you get a love for these things, it's hard to kind of let go of it.
Yeah. And would you the pace of it obviously can be so extraordinary when it's really hopping, when a game of hurling is going. Equally, you know, football to an extent. So you've been in the middle of both. You must be there at times on a football pitch where everyone thinks it's frenetic and you're saying, lads, you ain't seen nothing.
It's a different kettle of fish, all right? That's just it's the one thing I probably look about. People kind of wonder, you know, the fitness levels for both and how they differ. But like, as you can just chat with the brother about it as well, like there a while ago, like, in football, you could get the ball and kick it off and you might see it again for 2 minutes, whereas in hurling, it could be back on top of you in 2 seconds, you know, the ball travel that quick. So it's different in that kind of way. It can be more intense for shorter periods. But like I said, when there's sticks and everything flying around the place, it can be a bit of crack, all right.
Yeah, I'd say you can't switch off for a second in hurling. Maybe football you can for a moment, but geez, hurling, as you said, 2 seconds. And the really interesting thing, you know, so we're talking tactics in football and as if there's no tactics in hurling, and hurling people kind of say, you know, it's a bit overblown, the tactical side of things. Even Davy Fitz, I heard relatively recently, was saying, like, still the most important thing in hurling is the metric, you know, most hooks, most blocks, that'll kind of tell you still who's going to win hurling, like ferocious work rate, like just mad stuff happening. What about the tactics in hurling as opposed to, you know, we've talked already about football?
Yeah, I think, there's all that kind of stuff that, like you said there, that there's no tactics in hurling. I think back at the Kilkenny, back in the glory days, like they were just a case of going out in hurling. They were just the best team. Now, in fairness, they had the best team as well, but I suppose Brian Cody's thing was you just win your one-on-one battle, and like that, it was a lot of work rate. And I think work rate does get you so far in hurling, but I think you look at the way Limerick were playing, particularly the last couple of years, like their military tactical. I nearly described them to Dublin in hurling terms, in that they're very methodical in what they do. They stick to their game plan the whole time, whether it's, you know, the short hand pass and the short stick pass in game, and you know they get the ball to 60 yards out or 65 yards out, and they'll pop the ball over the bar. So, you know, there's definitely is a kind of a change in the last few years. I think majority of teams are probably still going down the route of, you know, we might play a sweeper or we might just kind of look to go short from the puck out, whereas Limerick are just taken to a completely different level, I think. And, you know, you rarely see a game with Limerick where it's kind of like non-stop 70 minutes, just high intensity. Like they just play the game. I wouldn't say they drag the game down, but they play it at their own terms, and it's been working for them. Like, whereas majority of other teams, you could have a Galway and Tip game and it could be just a shootout for 70 minutes, whereas Limerick never seemed to get right into that. They just play their own game.
They can almost exercise a level of control over hurling that you probably wouldn't have thought possible 10 years ago, you know?
Oh, absolutely. Like, I mean, if you look back 5 years ago, most games in Ireland were just nearly who can work hardest, who can score the most, and that was it, you know? Whereas, more like you said, they just control the game so much that it's nearly kind of taking the fun out of watching it at times.
The madness. Yeah, I know what you mean. It's funny though as well with that Kilkenny team, like even having a few of them in at times talking on the radio, you'd ask them about the tactics and Cody and they'd start talking then when you got them going about, oh, I suppose we would always drop two players back into the half back line and then one of our midfielders would do this and then, we'd get the forward to make those runs and have someone go then run into the space. But that's not tactics. That's just common sense. That's how they'd be like, that's not tactics. And you're like, you'd be kind of thinking, it's mostly tactics now. They just wouldn't call it tactics. But they were always up to manipulating the opposition.
Oh, 100%. Like, and they probably even, you know, I think it's a lot of the time you'd even say it's just playing to your strengths. Like, you know, totally. But, you know, if you have some of the best hurlers ever played the game in your forward line, I mean, you are going to play to your strengths and you're going to work around a game plan that will suit that. I mean, well, the tactic of putting Shefflin early on, kind of the most inexperienced defender most of the time. And,
That was just bullying.
Yeah, you know, but like I said, you know, some teams will call it playing their strengths, some teams will call it tactics, but it's I think it's always there in the background.
Tell me this, obviously Mayo is such a football county. Would the hurlers, in your experience now, be treated as well in terms of meals after training, facilities, the best of the best?
It's gotten better. In fairness, we are, I suppose, better looked after. Like, in fairness, yeah, you would always get kind of the meals after training. You would always get the gear. I suppose there will always be that disparity and kind of being treated as the best of the best, but a lot of that obviously comes down to funding.
So what would be the thing that you would have been on the receiving end of with the footballers that now is not happening and you kind of think, oh, that'd be useful if we could have it?
Look, I'm sure now if James Horne went to the county board and he said he wants 3 or 4 nights away in a hotel and for a mini training camp, he'd be so right, when are you going? Whereas if Eric Welsh went and said, I want an overnight stay in a hotel for a game, but like, how much is it going to cost? Do you really need it? You know, so it's probably things like that, really, that a lot of it just comes down to money at the end of the day. There's one thing that stands out, but definitely you can say that, you know, I wouldn't say it's equal across the field, put it that way.
They bring in the money. That's kind of the other
bottom line. Yeah, it's the bottom line. You know, it can be easy to justify spending 20 or 30,000 on footballers. It can be very, very difficult to justify spending the same amount of money on the hurlers.
Can you hide your, I'd still say you're bloody fast. I'd say you're still lightning. Can you hide the drop off in pace more in a hurling match than football? Will you be less exposed now?
You probably can, because you're in the forwards. You're not chasing around after Conor Callaghan or someone like that, you know? So you probably can in hurling a small bit, but like I said, you can probably do that as well if you're probably smart when you're in the forwards. Like I said, if you're a different cornerback, there's no hiding being caught out like that, you know, unless you have 12 men behind the ball or whatever. But you can probably, you can call it hiding it, you can call it playing a bit more experience. I'm not sure what way you want to word it.
I know, we'll call it experience. So, Kamir, final one. What's a good season for the Mayo Hurlers then? I'd have no sense of what to expect. I know, obviously, you're in Division 2B in the league and you're in the third tier of Championship. You're in the Nicky Rackard Cup. Mm. Where are Mayo and where are they kind of realistically hoping to get to?
Yeah, I think first things first, you want to be looking at winning the Nicky Rackard. It's as simple as that. Right.
And would that be a realistic goal?
Sorry?
Would that be a realistic goal?
I think so, yeah. Look, they got to the final last year and I suppose they'll say they'll be very disappointed if they lost to Donegal. League-wise, you know, we have a tough league as well. You know, could you potentially win that? Yeah, maybe. Like, they're in the same league, which would be a very tough game for us if you go up. I suppose, look, we got relegated last year from playing the likes of Kerry, likes of Antrim. You know, they are on a different level. You know, would we be competitive with them? You'd really need the best of your best out every week to be anyway competitive with them guys. So, you know, is getting promoted a bonus or not? I don't know. But definitely Championship is where you want to be aiming 100%.
Okay. Well, listen, very best of luck with it. Congrats on an amazing football career. Just ridiculous stuff. 70 Championship appearances is insane, really, over 16 seasons. And the best of luck over the summer ahead. Keith Higgins, great to have you on. Thanks so much, Keith.
Appreciate it. Thank you very much.
The OTB Podcast Network.